Signing day is a wrap. Big changes coming for basketball, and opening day is almost here. What's up, No Nation? I'm Jesse from Plant the Spear, and thank you for joining me for another episode. Hope all you guys are doing good out there as we gear up for Super Bowl Sunday. You know, I'm probably more excited about what's on the game day menu and what I'm going to throw on the smoker than the actual game itself, because I don't have a team in the fight. So with that being said, we're going to get into some more Super Bowl talk later, but first we have updates from all across Florida State to cover. So let's start with some FSU football, talking about Tribe 25, now that this class has been signed, sealed, and delivered. You know, I think the first takeaway is there was really no surprises. And I know for most FSU fans, that's actually a good thing, because we've gotten used to some negative surprises on early signing day, losing the top recruit and things like that. And sure, you could probably argue that we had kind of already lost some of the top recruits in this class. But really, I think when you look at it, they did a good job of holding on to the class that they did have left over. And we got some positive surprises with some signing day flips on the early signing day period. Of course, you know, the early signing day period really is signing day now. And the actual signing day is kind of a late signing day. Not a whole lot of activity to report on that front. They signed three more commitments to add to the class. Three-star DB Antonio Cromartie Jr., legacy commit, of course. Three-star center Chavez Sandman Thompson makes it official with the Noles. And four-star offensive tackle Chasten Brown locks in with Tribe 25. Now, they did, I'm going to say, miss on four-star Zaire Mathis out of Philadelphia, I believe it is. I don't know that it's so much of a miss. It's just I know they really heavily pursued him and they did not land him. He did end up signing with Maryland, but it was pretty close to home where he's from up there in the Northeast. And from what I heard, it wasn't believed to be like we got outbid in NIL or anything like that. I think it was just had a lot to do with being close to home. So, you know, it's unfortunate because he's a talented player, but we only have like 20 edges that have been signed, edge defender signed in the class. So I think we're good there. Looking at the class as a whole, 2025, Tribe 25, as we call it, finishes 19th in the 247 composite rankings and 20th in the On3 industry rankings, second in the ACC in both sets by both companies there. Look, let's be honest. It's not where we need to be. Florida State needs to be, you know, signing top 10 classes consistently. And I know the rankings sometimes, you know, some people have different feelings on where the rankings, how much they truly matter versus what you actually get out of the class. Because, you know, you can pad your ranking with some three stars and things like that. I get all that. But I think when you look at the consistent contenders that actually go win and compete for national championships, you need to be signing a top 10 class. And we've talked about this before in past episodes. But with that being said, I do think considering that this class was ranked in the 50s, like a week or a couple of days before early signing day, considering how much this class had fallen apart throughout the course of that two-win season, the staff changes, you had to bring in basically an entire new staff to come in and throw a class together in a short amount of time. I think it's pretty respectable what they were able to do to, you know, raise this class like 30 spots and to finish in the top 20. And then you combine that with that top five transfer class, and I think you have some things to work with here, right? And truth be told, no matter what the ranking is, I think they got some really nice pieces here as well to add to this roster. So the first place I want to start is with some updates here. The On 300, of course, put out by On3, they just recently released their final rankings update, the last update for the 2025 class. And that's why we're going to use it. Normally, you guys know I'm a 247 rankings guy, but On3 did their final update for the class. So I want to talk about that. Really, the most notable here is edge defender Tylon Lee, which Florida State snagged out of their own backyard there in Pace, Florida. Snatched him from Ole Miss on a signing day flip there, rose to the 24th overall player, top 25. That's national now. That is a top 25 national recruit in the 2025 class and earned a fifth star per On3. Now, there are some variants in rankings. I believe he's still only a three star in 247. So 247, I'm going to need you to get it together, right? We need to do some updates here because, man, his film is exciting to watch. And they got a really good player, Tylon Lee, here. And actually, you know, thing is, I've read some articles where they're calling this the signing day steal, the steal of signing day from Florida State, snagging them away from Ole Miss. And so, again, that's one of the positive surprises that I was talking about there. Terrence Knighton coming in, Tony White coming in and already doing some work here. Then you got Osmane Chroma rose 50 spots up to the 58th ranked national recruit. That was another positive signing day, early signing day flip from Georgia. And I really think, and took them right out of their backyard too. And so really what I'm hoping for is that this may be a sign of things to come, right? If they can do these things late in this class on kind of a last minute whim, just throwing everything together, if they can get back to having success on the field, winning 10 games or, you know, or better, competing for the ACC championship, getting into the playoffs, you hope that this new rebooted staff has the ability to go out and go toe-to-toe on the trail and start landing these top 10 classes. But let's talk about a few other positives from this 2025 class here. Obviously, one of the names that's not a flip but was really huge to keep from flipping is Kevin Wynn. You held on to him, defensive tackle, who is a top 100 recruit in both 247 and On3 rankings, was heavily pursued by a lot of other programs. We know that. And so he stuck, you know, stayed the course. You saw a couple of other, you know, Myron Charles and other guys like that went ahead and took it on down the road. Kevin Wynn stayed committed. And, you know, he talked about his relationship with Odell, talked about Terrence Knighton coming in and the things that they were able, you know, to go over with him. So really that was a huge one to hold on to. I mean, this is a guy that, remember, at the Navy All-American Bowl or what, All-Star, whatever it is. This was a guy that was an MVP of day one of practice, actually had to sit out because he was too dominant. And so, like, this is a big get at a position of need because we know high school recruiting on the defensive line, particularly the defensive tackle position, has really not been where it needed to be over the past few years. Now, again, it's going to need to get better going forward, but it was a big get to hold on to him. You land four players who are top 10 at their position per these On3 rankings. You get defensive tackle Kevin Wynn, who we just mentioned, Chroma, the running back that we talked about, Tylon Lee as well as top 10 at his position. And then I know some people are going to kind of roll their eyes at this, but you get a top 10 kicker slash punter in Bruno Reus. I'm sorry if I'm saying your last name wrong there, my friend, but that, I mean, obviously special teams can win games. And look, we just had an amazing special teams year with Alex Mastromano and then Ryan Fitzgerald as well there. So, I mean, it's a big element of the game. And so I think that was a good position to land there. You know, Florida State's pushing to be special teams you with some of the guys that we have had. Another good, really high-level get out of this class is LaJesse Harold, who is a consensus four-star edge. That was a big get there as well. I believe they took him actually from LSU, who was really heavily involved there. So, you know, again, you're going in and you're winning some of these recruiting battles against SEC programs coming off the season that you had. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is what you hope for. This is what you wanted with this new staff. You wanted to see recruiting be an emphasis. So hopefully, again, like I mentioned, when you get more success on the field, this will lead to bigger wins on the recruiting trail. Now, of course, they're going to have to win on the field. That's the most important. But with that success, you hope it snowballs into recruiting wins as well. Another one that I really like here, Javan Boggs is one of the most productive high school receivers I've probably ever seen. His stats from high school are absolutely nuts. And so this is a guy that was previously committed to Ohio State, then flipped to Mizzou, and lastly flipped to UCF. I mean, the guy, you know, maybe he should be a gymnast because he's doing a lot of flips, but he finally lands with Florida State here after flipping, following Gus Malzahn from UCF. And this would have been UCF's highest ranked recruit in the modern recruiting era. So thank you, Gus, for getting that one. I think this guy, you know, four-star wide receiver, he's going to be a special player for Florida State in the future. Again, his high school stats are amazing. And then I think the other thing, while we're on the subject of receiver, is just the size that they were able to bring in. And this is something that Mike Norvell said they really wanted to accomplish in this class. We know when you look back to what they were able to do with Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman, you know, size pays off at the receiver. And so they brought in speed with guys like Javon Boggs. They brought in speed with guys like Squirrel White, even though he's only here for 1 year. But when you look at the high school class here, you get 6'4", Tayshawn Gelsey, who could be tight end slash wide receiver. You got 6'5", Tariq Mallory, 6'5", tight end Chase Lofton, 6'7", JUCO wide receiver Jordan Scott. So, man, just doing a lot of big things there at the receiver position. And of course, you know, in the portal, they also added 6'6" Deuce Robinson. So really excited to see what they can do with the size on the outside and also speed that they have in the slot. Keep in mind, Jalen Lucas is a guy that's coming back next year who was a very productive player in the short amount of time that we saw him. You brought in two top five JUCO players in wide receiver Jordan Scott and defensive lineman Tylan Coleman. So again, two big gets from the JUCO ranks as well. And also you addressed a lot of positions of need, particularly the trenches. You signed 10 trench players, 4 on offense, 6 on defense, and you managed to bring in, you know, of course, you lost your quarterback from the 2025 class, but you added Kevin Sperry, dual threat quarterback who fits the new system. So again, guys, like I said, I know 20th on paper on the ranking may not be where we want to be, but I think it's a pretty impressive class given where you're coming from, given what you had to do to throw this class together, given some of the signing day flips to Florida State instead of from Florida State. I think they did a really good job, and I think you got some really nice pieces at positions of need in this 2025 class. So, you know, Tribe 25, I think it shook out well. And you look at Tribe 26 is already a top 10 class. Now, I know it's very early and that's a small class, but you're hoping if they can get back to success on the field that this is something that they can, you know, maybe perpetually sign some top 10 classes. But again, I think you got some great additions to this Florida State roster out of Tribe 25. Now, staying in the football vein here, I want to talk about something that I've noticed over the past week or so watching some of these newcomer interviews that Florida State has put out. You know, they let the new transfers come in and talk about, you know, just meet with the media, do their first availability. And I thought this was really important to talk about because there's something that I've noticed that's kind of been a commonality amongst all these guys that are coming to the podium. And I hear you, right? Talk is cheap and actions matter because we heard all this talk last year, mostly from the coaching staff and things like that about how good this team was going to be, how great the offensive line and all this stuff was going to be. Look, I'm with you. I'm not buying any of it this year until I see it on the field. But I do think there are some things that stood out that we can take from this because, again, these are guys that weren't here last year, so they weren't a part of that 2-10 team. These are guys who are coming in to change the narrative about Florida State. And what I like the most is most of these newcomers here, they really exude leadership and confidence, which was something this program was missing last year. Multiple players also spoke about the talent they have here versus where they came from and how excited they are to be able to work with that talent and what they think they can achieve there. You know, I will say when we talk about leadership and confidence, some of these comments were taken out of context here, taken the wrong way, blown up on social media and things like that. I think the one we probably all can point to the most here is James Williams, defensive end transfer from Nebraska, talking about Bama, saying that he's here to dominate against Bama. I think that was taken out of context because he didn't say he was just here to dominate Bama. He said he was here to dominate against teams like Alabama, against teams like Clemson, against teams like Florida, and not just be good against a team like Wake Forest. So I do think that it was taken a little bit out of context, but I like the way he's saying that. And for the people who say, well, don't give them bulletin board material, I've seen Alabama sites and pages sharing this as well. Look, man, the point is, are they not supposed to be confident? These are Power 5, Power 4, high-level college athletes. I mean, look at Jared Verse. By the way, Defensive Rookie of the Year. We'll talk about that in a second. There is probably not a bigger trash talker on the planet. Him and Trey Benson were guys that used to go back and forth with each other. You know, you think of the Telvin Smiths of the world, the Marcus Joiners, these guys that used to really just have that confidence and have that leadership and that dog mentality. That's what I want from a player. I want alpha dogs on this team and in the locker room. I don't want a player who's like, oh, well, I hope we do good and I hope we can win some games. No, man, I want guys who come in and are confident in their skill sets. They're confident that you're going to win games and they're going to go out there and put in the work and be the leaders necessary to accomplish their goals. I mean, to me, I think the important thing to point out is that there is a difference between arrogance and confidence. And I don't think this is coming from a place of arrogance. I think this is more coming from a place of confidence in their teammates, confidence in themselves and their coaches and what they hope to accomplish. So to me, I really, really like that. I want people who embrace those expectations at Florida State. They're not scared. They're not going to run from that. And I think that's what we saw across a lot of the newcomers here. And I think that's important because, again, the one thing that we feel like we were missing the most. When we talk about that 23 team, when we talk about that 22 team and the big names, the big personalities we had on that team, you really didn't seem to notice that on last year's team. You know, a lot of times when adversity hit, you were looking for leaders. You didn't really get that out of the quarterback position when DJU was there. And that's not a knock on DJU, but most of you saw, like I did, he just did not appear to really be that big time leader at the most important position. And I think that was a big part of what happened in 2024. You need leaders on this team. You need guys who can pick you up and turn things around and be that voice that carries in the locker room. You know, and two of the ones I really want to highlight here is, first, obviously, at the most important position that we just talked about, Thomas Castellanos at quarterback. You know, he spoke a lot about being a leader, and leadership was something that he felt the locker room lacked. So a guy that just comes in already sees the lack of leadership in the locker room and how he felt that, you know, he wanted to be that guy. He wanted to try and lead this team. He's got some experience under his belt now, and how the guys embraced him coming in as a newcomer and allowed him to lead. He talked about how they've really done a great job with building relationships with the team. Of course, you're going to have to back it up with your play on the field, but I like the fact that he was able to, you know, embrace that role. I think one of the other things I want to touch on here that's maybe outside of that conversation is he did speak about his progression as a passer, trusting his teammates and not just being a young guy out there running around trying to make things happen by himself. You know, we talked about how he progressed as a passer under Bill O'Brien, even though it wasn't maybe the system that was built for him, but he said that he learned a lot. And so I'm hoping that you can see him continue that progression coming into 2025 at Florida State, where you can see him have the legs, have the big impact as that dynamic type of dual threat quarterback that we expect him to be, but to also be more of a quarterback instead of just a running back, a guy who wants to show that he can do the things with his arm. And, you know, again, his numbers have been pretty decent when you look at the way he progressed from a passing standpoint. We've talked about that before. He did speak about being in Malzahn's offense when he was there at UCF and how it is explosive and up-tempo and how both of them have more talent to work with from him coming from BC and Gus coming from UCF. So it gets you excited, right? I mean, that's what you want. You want guys to be excited about the situation they're coming into, guys who aren't putting the blinders on, right? They're not worried about what happened last year. They're coming in trying to change the narrative this year. And that's all that really matters. The other one I want to talk about is the James Williams interview. You know, obviously this is a guy who, man, he's very intelligent and very well-spoken. But I thought the interesting thing about James Williams' interview was he was able to give you some insight into your defensive staff that comes over from Nebraska. One of the things that he talked about was how Tony White is more multiple than people think. I think a lot of times our vision gets locked in on that 3-3-5 defense, how different it's going to look. But the one thing I like that he said, and we've talked about this in past shows when we talked about Tony White and his opening comments as DC here at FSU, where he plays to his talent that he has at his disposal. You know, he said really the primary driver of him running a 3-3-5 was from coaching at places where it was hard to acquire depth of talent on the defensive line. He also said that he likes to play who is the best players, not who maybe he's supposed to, like you're an upperclassman or whatever. He likes to play the hot hand and, you know, going into certain situations where he talked about when they played Colorado and Shador, they wanted a guy who could get in there and rush the passer. And so he had a lot of packages in there. He said when they went into the shoe to play Ohio State, you wanted your veteran leaders on the field. And so I really like the dynamic aspect of what I'm hearing from Tony White's defense. I like using the players who are, you know, there's so many times where we saw last year where it was like, okay, well, maybe this guy is playing better from the two spot, but you're still seeing the guys in the one spot maybe loafing or not playing well. You know, a lot of times we thought we would see guys get benched and it never happened. And that seems like what it's going to be like with Tony White, right? You play the hot hand, you play the talented players, and you really use the talent to your advantage. So I think you're going to see a lot of multiple fronts here. You're going to see some 4-2-5, 4-3, 3-3-5, that very multiple defense. One of the other things that also stood out was he said that Daryl Jackson has been a big-time leader for not only the defensive line group, but the entire defense, really, and the team. And I think that's important because you want some guys who have been here before to also be the leaders. You don't want to force leadership, which is a lot of things they talked about last year with guys like Darius Washington, you know, who weren't verbal leaders, so to speak, but they were pushing them into that role. But I think it's good to have voices that have already been here to step into that leadership role. And one of the things that I was interested with Darryl Jackson choosing to come back to Florida State this year, you know, pulling his name out of the draft, even though Josh Farmer was in the draft, Patrick Payton went on his way over to LSU, I thought it was going to be interesting to see how he responded as kind of being his own guy this year, right? You're not surrounded by friends. You're not surrounded by a lot of the guys. And, you know, maybe he was one of them too that kind of held FSU over the fire for more NIL money. This is his money year. He's got to make this count. And I really do think that seeing him embrace that role, seeing him kind of clearing the noise, blocking out the noise and, you know, stepping into that leadership role is big because you need a big year from that guy. I mean, again, 6'6", 350 or 330, they don't make that every day of the week. So that is a huge asset there on the defensive line. So you want to see him be a leader in this room. So I like hearing that as well. Now, to stay on the football aspect here, and just to tie that in, man, again, that's why I wanted to say this too. That's why I feel like this is just going to be a different year. Again, we talked about this. It's a different staff. It's a lot of different players. It's a different mentality. Florida State seems to be shifting these players. They don't care what happened last year. They're not focused on that. Obviously, they know what happened. It's there. It's going to be talked about. But with so many changes, you have a fresh slate. You're 0-0 right now. That doesn't matter anymore. You have to go out and you have to earn your reputation this year because, you know, that season that happened last year, it doesn't matter anymore. And so I like seeing these guys that are coming in, taking on leadership roles from day one. You know, James Williams talked about being a veteran in the room and leading the younger guys. Darryl Jackson did that too. You know, Deuce Robinson is another guy that was a very impressive speaker as well. So you got a lot of veteran pieces on the offensive line that come in here that can help bring up these young guys and lead this team. You have guys that have a lot of experience. That's something that Micah Pettis talked about, you know, coming from the SEC where they played in a lot of big games. You know, Luke Pettibon was a captain there at Wake Forest. Not only do you have players who are more proven this year, you have guys that have done it on the field. You have guys that have been in leadership roles. And, you know, for all the things that happened last year that caused that chaotic season, that disastrous season, leadership, I think, was at the core of one of those. You know, think about Jared Verse, like we talked about before. They're not going to put up with loafing and lack of effort and lack of leadership. Those guys were going to, you know, they would take you by the shoulders and you know, and make sure things got straightened out. And so that's one of the things I'm most excited about with this new team, because if you have leadership and you have guys who know they got to go prove it on the field, I think that's really going to pay dividends into Florida State having a bounce back season coming up this year. Now, talking about Jared Verse, I do want to give him a shout out, winning Defensive Rookie of the Year there in the NFL with the Rams. Braden Fisk was also in the running there in the finalists. So, man, just screw the committee first off, right? We have to say that. It's like our obligatory comment here that, man, they robbed that team of a chance to really go prove things. You know, just because of one guy getting injured, I'll still die on that hill. If Jordan Travis doesn't get injured, Florida State probably is the national champion in 2023. Even without him, I think they deserve to be in the playoffs to prove what they could do. But, man, huge shout-out to Jared Verse. Absolutely a dominant rookie year in the NFL. So looking forward to watching his journey going forward. And the last thing on football before we transition into some of the other sports here is that Super Bowl, man, coming up Sunday. The Chiefs and the Eagles down in New Orleans. Look, I don't know how excited you are to watch the Super Bowl, but what you should be excited for is watching Jameis Winston this week. He is a Fox correspondent, and they gave this man a microphone, a camera, and free range on the city of New Orleans, and it has been one of the most entertaining things I've seen. I retweeted some stuff on social media and shared it on Facebook. If you want to go check that out, I encourage you to, because, you know, we love Jameis. He's one of our own. And he's a natural fit in the media, man. Nobody has more fun than Jameis, except for maybe the people who are watching Jameis have so much fun. He is an absolute character, an absolute treasure. So it's so much fun to watch him flourish in that role. And I hope this becomes a permanent thing when he does decide to hang it up on the field. I hope he does get into the media because, man, he is just so entertaining. But talking about that Super Bowl, you know, I get it, man. I don't really have a favorite team in this one. I kind of want the Eagles to pull the win. I mean, obviously, Saquon Barkley is a very talented player here. They got Josh Sweat over there. You know, they got Johnny Wilson on the Eagles. Of course, you got Derek Nnadi over there with the Chiefs, and I love what he does every time they win a Super Bowl. He does the adoption for the dogs there in Kansas City through the Humane Society, so I love every time they win. But, you know, I just think, man, people are about tired of Kansas City and, you know, the script, as they say. Me personally, I'm probably pulling for Philadelphia, knowing that I don't have a team in the fight. But you already know the script's been written, and the refs are, you know, they got their red and yellow on underneath the zebra stripes, and they're going to be making sure that Kansas City gets that third Super Bowl. So, you know, it is what it is. We'll wait and see. Like I said, I'm excited for the game day menu. I already just picked up some things for the smoker. Now, let's talk about the rest of Florida State sports. And before, don't make sure you watch to the end, because I have some news on a giveaway that we're running as well. So you don't want to miss that. But first, let me bring you a word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall, who is partnering with us on that giveaway that I'm going to tell you about towards the end of this episode when we get to some baseball talk here. But Alumni Hall FSU, they got elite FSU gear. And you can catch them in Tallahassee, 1415 Timberlane Road, or shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR. So appreciate those guys for supporting us and for you guys supporting them. Let's talk about some big changes coming for basketball. Now, we won't spend a ton of time on this because I know it's kind of old news to you guys now with Leonard Hamilton announcing he's going to step down slash retire, whatever you want to call it there. But I'd be remiss if I didn't share my thoughts on this. So we'll go through this real quick. Obviously, what I'm not going to do is come on here and, you know, talk down upon Leonard Hamilton, who's been a great ambassador for the program. I have been one that called for change to happen. I did literally a day or two before this announcement was made. I posted on social media that it was time for a change after that embarrassing loss to Boston College on the hardwood there. But looking at Leonard Hamilton, I think he does deserve to be honored. 23 seasons at Florida State, 16 postseason appearances here, winning as coach in FSU basketball history. Now, it's probably not hard to do when you're the longest tenured basketball coach in FSU history, but fifth in ACC history as far as winning as coach. Man, he had some really good teams in recent years. You think about the squads there that made the Elite Eight in 2018, Sweet 16 in 19 and 21. And then, of course, that 2020 team is the one that stands out the most in most of our minds here. That season really did rob Coach Hamilton of one of his best chances to make a Final Four or maybe even make a run at getting his first national title. And, of course, the tournament, you know, was canceled because of the COVID season there. They were really good. I mean, you're talking about an ACC winning team that finished top five in the country, number four overall ranking. So that one hurt. I mean, that team was special. They were different. You even had the Tuck was packed every single game, and it was a crazy home court advantage. That is probably one of the top three, like, robberies, most painful postseason screw jobs against FSU that stands out in our minds over the last few years. Of course, we know number one is the CFP screwing FSU out of a chance to prove what they were worth in the playoffs there. And then I think that tournament getting canceled really kind of was a big one, a heartbreaker there as well. And then, of course, for the FSU baseball fans, you know that last year's blown check swing call against Tennessee, which really kind of cost them the game. Now, they still had a chance to win, and they blew it on their home, but that check swing call would have probably changed the outcome of things there. Man, just some painful postseason memories. So hopefully we can get past that going forward. Now, the other thing that is worth tipping your cap to Leonard Hamilton here is he did have a almost 97% graduation rate by players who finished their eligibility. And outside of the things that have come about recently with some NIL stuff, we're not going to dive into that. He's been a good face for the program, and he has kept FSU respectable for a long time when you consider he is at a football school in a basketball conference. And I'm sure the resources that other teams like Duke and North Carolina and things like that, Syracuse, that they put into basketball, Florida State's probably just not doing that. And so he's done a really good job of keeping FSU respectable. Now, the one thing I would say before we talk about the flip side of this coin is I think they should have announced it before the season to give him a nice send-off, to kind of do that retirement tour. Now, maybe he didn't want that. I don't know. He's a humble guy there. But it's always tough to end the career of a longtime veteran coach like that. This is kind of the same thing we went through with Coach Bowden. You know, if they'd had a good year, would he have even wanted to retire? I don't think Florida State had any interest in renewing his contract. And, you know, to be frank, he is 76 years old and was in the final year of his contract. I don't think Florida State was going to renew that contract. I think they knew it was time for a change. We all knew it was time for change. It's been time for change the last few years. But I also don't think FSU was really going to worry about buying him out in the midst of everything that they already had going on. I mean, you were paying Willie Taggart's buyout. You were changing baseball coaches. You were remodeling the stadium, building the football-only facility, getting those funds in order and things like that. So I don't think they were in a position where they wanted to do that right away. But just when you look at the past few years, they just have not produced good enough results. They haven't had a winning season in ACC play in 4 years. They haven't made the tournament since 2021. And they've started losing some games that they shouldn't relative to the amount of talent that they have. Again, think back to that Boston College game that we just talked about. The Tuck has been pretty empty, more than not, and so it was just time, you know. And really what I'm hoping for is they bring in somebody young, a fresh face that can relate with players and build this program up. And I really hope that they can send Hamilton out on a high note this year. Obviously, beating Notre Dame was a good start. I know they got Virginia coming up, depending on when you watch this. And I think one of the other things that is important here is the ACC's announced, you know, this success initiative that they have, the proposed brand value that we talked about in the last episode that they're exploring as well. It is tied to football. That is, of course, the primary driver. But men's basketball is also a big part of that because, again, remember, this is technically kind of a considered a basketball conference here. So it really benefits Florida State to be good in both of those areas. So it's just time for a change. And that's something that Leonard Hamilton talked about in his press conference where he addressed this. Like, look, it's time for change for me. It's time for a fresh voice to lead this program. And so I think he is taking it graciously. It's kind of going on this last run. They got a couple games left. And then you're going to look at who you're going to replace him with. And so, again, kudos to Leonard Hamilton. Thank you for your time in Garnet and Gold. We really appreciate what you've done for this program. But looking ahead, looking to the future here, you know, you are going to ask a coach to come in to a football school in a basketball conference and produce results. So to me, to get somebody who's going to be able to do that, Florida State's probably going to have to make some commitments in NIL and resources to land somebody really good, like some of the names we're going to talk about. Chances are it's going to need to be an FSU guy who can create some excitement within the program and within, you know, the boosters and the donors who are going to help fund these things. I think some of the top candidates that I've seen out there on the list that most of us are looking at here, number one overall, I think everybody is pointing towards Luke Laux. He's only 34 years old, former FSU player, currently an assistant with the Sacramento Kings. He's been a coach in the NBA since 2016. Spent time with the Warriors, has been a part of two NBA championships. I think the biggest concern here is, can you get him out of the NBA? Can you get him before another NBA team snags him up? I think that's our number one candidate there. Sam Cassell is another one that we're looking at, probably your number two candidate here, 55 years old. A little older, longer in the tooth than Luke Laux, but he's still much younger than Leonard Hamilton here. 16-year NBA career, been a coach since 2008, currently with the Celtics, has won championships as a player and has one as a coach. I think this will be a great fit as well. So these are probably your top two candidates. Just a couple other names that obviously have been thrown around. The one I feel that is the most unlikely is going to be Dennis Gates coming from Mizzou. He is currently their head coach, 45 years old, longtime assistant at Florida State. The reason I don't see this happening is he makes $4 million a year there at Mizzou. I think it would be a great get if you could get him. I just don't see Florida State paying that much for a basketball coach. Mizzou could obviously counter that offer there to keep him in the fold. And this is back to what we talk about where Florida State needs to get out of the ACC in the long term so you can have these extra funds for coaching hires and things like that. But, you know, Ham only makes around $2.25 million. I don't think they're going to pay Dennis Gates $4 million. Charlton C.Y. Young, 53 years old, longtime assistant at Florida State, great recruiter while he was here, helped put together some good teams. Currently the associate head coach there at Mizzou with Dennis Gates. So this could be an option for you as well. And I think those are the top four names. I've seen some names like Rick Pitino, who's killing it in the Big East at St. John's right now, but he's 72 years old. I don't know how much interest is there, but I just think you're going to have to find somebody that can create some excitement within this program because it would be nice for Florida State basketball to be good again. You know, I'm not a huge FSU basketball fan, but I like FSU in all sports. I am a one team fan. And so I like when they do good, and obviously the excitement that builds, the crowds in the Tuck and things like that, you know, so you want to get this right. And so they are starting a national search, and we'll see how it goes. Now, the last thing I want to talk about here is some updates from baseball as opening day approaches. Now, again, make sure you stay tuned because I'm going to talk about this giveaway that we have coming up as we get ready to close the episode. But real quick, just want to share some thoughts on baseball. As most of you guys know, and you know, as we are as well, baseball season is coming up. And after last year, man, I think we're all probably FSU baseball fans. We're looking for a big season from Link Jarrett and the guys there. Season starts next weekend, Saturday, February 14th, against James Madison. And look, there's high expectations for this season. They are a consensus top 10 team in just about every preseason poll out there, but they have a lot to replace. I think there's a lot of similarities to the football program. You came in coming off a really good run of a season there where they made it out to Omaha. They were one of the last four teams standing. You come in with high expectations, but you have some big pieces to replace. Obviously, you know, you got guys like James Tibbs there to replace Cam Smith, Dinges, you know, Jaime Ferrer that went to the MLB. So you got some question marks that you got to answer to. Last year, they relied heavily on a powerful offense and a few good arms. You know, we also obviously lost Cam Leiter. He had some injuries there in the bullpen, and you just had some young arms that maybe weren't ready for the spotlight yet. This year, it's going to be more of a small ball approach where you are relying more on putting the ball in play, forcing the other team to make mistakes, being smart on the base path, and having a deeper rotation on the mound. And this is what I'm really most excited about for FSU baseball coming up this season, because obviously it helps to have pretty much the undisputed best pitcher in the country, and that is left-handed ace Jamie Arnold. Was a magnificent pitcher for Florida State last year, had a great offseason, added a new pitch, did some things for Team USA there. Now he comes back looking for another big season. Still no clue on what's going on with Cam Leiter, as we mentioned before. Link made it sound like in his preseason press conference that is not happening anytime soon. We'll have to wait and see. We got to play this one by ear. It's kind of a strange situation, but we'll just see how it plays out. With that said, South Florida transfer Joey Vellini sounds like he's ready to step into one of those weekend starter roles as maybe your number two arm there. But looking down this pitching staff, Florida State has about 10 arms that can be real contributors this year, not counting Cam Leiter. So if you get him back, that's obviously a big bonus. While we're talking about baseball, make sure you head over to the website, plantthespear.com. Our guy Jeff, the baseball analyst for us, we just got up his offensive preview. I'm getting ready to publish his defensive preview, and then we're going to roll out a pitching staff preview as well. We'll have all that ready for you before opening day gets here. But again, like we said, they start with James Madison, who was no slouch last year. This is going to be a pretty good test for them, 36-25, but 9-16 on the road. So you're hoping Florida State can win there. Then they got USF, Penn, JU, a couple of teams to kind of really find their footing with some of these new pieces that they brought in. But they got a tough schedule. As you guys, most of you guys know, the ACC is a tough baseball conference. But I do think one thing that should help Florida State this year is you get a majority of the toughest series at home. And keep in mind, last year, Hauser was an absolute home field advantage. You know, shout out to the Animals of Section B. Shout out to the Florida State fans that showed up and showed out last year. They sold out a bunch of games. Florida State was 32-4 inside Hauser last year and only 8-10 on the road. This year, they get number 2 UVA, number 15 Clemson, number 6 UNC, and number 14 Wake Forest all at home. You know, last year, their first loss, they started, 19-0, I believe it was. Their first loss was Clemson on the road. They had to go to a lot of these tougher teams. So now you get a lot of them at home. So hopefully that helps buoy some success for Florida State this year. Now, the last thing I want to say about baseball here is the ACC did announce a new tournament format. It is going to be single elimination. All 16 teams will participate this year. It's in Durham, North Carolina, where it has been in the past. But thankfully, there is no more unnecessary confusing games with the double elimination, round robin, pool play games. That was just kind of a disaster, right? This is, you got to win, you know, to stay in it, but it should be a lot less wear and tear on the teams who are headed to the postseason. You know, and Florida State was one of those teams that, you know, got the host last year. And so you want to have fresh, you don't want to wear your bullpen out before you get into postseason play. Now, the important thing here is seeds 1-4 get a double bye. So that's really big. You want to finish as one of those top four seeds, because again, not only is it going to help you win an ACC championship, it's also going to save your arms. It's going to keep you fresh as you got less games to go through there. Seeds 5 through 8 get a single bye, so that's at least a little boost there as well. So that's the updated changes for baseball as we get ready for opening day to get here. So again, keep in mind, we're going to have baseball previews for you rolling out on the site throughout the week. There's already one up that you can check out. And while we're talking about it, the last thing I want to get into, guys, here is our opening day giveaway brought to you by us here at Plant the Spear, as well as our friends over there at Alumni Hall. And to celebrate the return of FSU baseball season, which kind of almost appears to be the only sport we're good at anymore, or at least right now, hopefully we get back on track in football. We want to send you to the opening day game against James Madison. So we have 2 general admission tickets and a $50 Alumni Hall gift card. So you can load up on new FSU gear, new baseball gear that they have there, on your way to Hauser for that opening day game. And look, it's completely free to enter. So all you have to do is head on over to our website, plantthespear.com. You will see it at the top of the page there where you can click to go enter. There's multiple ways you can get multiple entries. From visiting social media pages, following us on social media, things like that, subscribing to the podcast, subscribing to the YouTube. So make sure you check that out. Again, it's completely free. 2 tickets to the opening game, as well as a $50 gift card. So go check that out. It's just something we want to do to give back to our listeners. We had to move it to the website. We couldn't do it on social media this year because with the football one last year, the spam just went crazy. So make sure you check that out. Make sure you follow our friends over there at Alumni Hall. We appreciate them getting in on this with us. So with that being said, guys, that we're going to wrap it up here. I appreciate you guys tuning in and watching. Look, we are less than 100 subscribers away from hitting 2,000. That would be massive for the channel here. Again, we appreciate all of you guys watching, all of you guys liking and sharing and commenting. So if you guys could just, again, like and subscribe, rate and review on the podcast, tell a friend, tell a neighbor, help us get the word out as we try and grow the channel here. We're looking forward to another big year as well. So appreciate you guys watching, and that's going to be it for this one. We will catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.